You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of December 12th, 2017. And this is episode number 341. And as always, this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. First and foremost, I don't like all these messages. Usually have to say, well, you know, we're thinking of this or thinking of that. There's always something going on. There's always a holiday or something. But I think it's appropriate that I wish everyone out there a happy Hanukkah if you celebrate the holidays. So happy Hanukkah to anyone out there that is celebrating. Yeah, the seasons have arrived. It's here. And so is winter, at least here in Northeast Ohio. We've been getting some steady stream of snow. I know Pennsylvania and New York also getting some lake effect snow. And it's cold here. Very windy. Temperature in the teens. I've got my hoodie on, my official Paranormal News Insider hoodie and my Paranormal News Insider 20-ounce mug full of hot tea, ready to go for tonight's Paranormal News Insider show. My gosh, December 12th, the calendar is almost ready to flip. We got two more weeks of the show in the year, and you know what that means. If you've been an avid listener to the show over the last couple of years, we do a news countdown, the top 10 paranormal news stories of the year, and this is 2017, and yeah, we're well underway. Tonight, we are going to debut number 6 and number 5, but don't worry, if you've missed out on the countdown, we're going to do a really, really quick rehash of the last few, and tonight, stay tuned, you're going to want to listen to this. It's going to get a little controversial up in here, and yeah, some people are going to get mad at me. I know it's going to happen, but that's okay, because I'm just calling it like I see it. And tonight, we're also going to talk Mothman. Yes, there's a very important thing about Mothman happening very soon. And also happening very soon, we're going back to the moon. Yeah, and to Mars. A big announcement about that yesterday. And there's going to be another big announcement on Thursday from NASA. We'll talk about that. And we'll talk about a lot more. There's a lot of weird stories that just popped up in the last couple of days, some coming out of the weekend. And I wasn't sure if I was going to talk about them because I do want to focus on the top 10. But I also want to keep you, the listener, informed as to what's going on out there in the world of the paranormal and to keep it straight. To keep it straight so you know exactly what's going on, not just the headline or what people are talking about, the reality behind these stories. That's what I do. That's what I'm here for. I do that legwork. I'm in the trenches. I see this stuff. I deal with this stuff. So I'm bringing you the inside story. And tonight, this week's news is brought to you by the International Cryptozoology Museum, located in Portland, Maine. The International Cryptozoology Museum opened in 2003 and contains rare and original items collected by Lauren Coleman, the director of the museum. And you can visit the International Cryptozoology Museum, which is at 4 Thompson's Point Road, Suite 106. But you might not want to go right now. It's probably a little cold up there. A lot of stuff is shut down, but he's open. So you can go visit the museum. And if you look around, you find a lot of mysterious and spooky looking things. And you also stumble upon my book, Handbook of the Amateur Cryptozoologist. You can get a hold of that book there. See what I did there? Plugged it. It's been a crazy week. I don't know. It's just this year is just flying by at this point. December, it just felt like it was October last week. And I tell you, it's coming up quick. And last week, I after this show, I had to do another show. I had an hour break, and then I was on with Jim Mallard of the Mallard Report. And it's always weird to be on, you know, I talked about this last week, be on one side of the mic 1 minute and on the other side of the mic the next minute as a guest. I'm not really a host here, but you're my guest, I guess, the listener. But I had a lot of fun, and he doesn't call it the fastest hour on paranormal radio for nothing. It went by so fast. It's so much fun talking to Jim and being a guest on his show. He just keeps you on your toes. You never know what's going to happen. He's got his rapid fire questions, and it's just kind of a weird, fun conversation. And you just get to, it's like kind of like hanging out with him. So it's kind of like one of those hanging out with a paranormal friend kind of thing. And it's always a comfortable interview. And really enjoyed my time last week with Jim on the Mallard Report. You can hear that every Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. And you can go to tmr247.net, and it'll take you to wherever you need to go and listen to his show. He's great. Be in the chat room, too. He's got a great chat room, as do we here on WCJV. You just got to be careful of Dita. She likes to... She likes snow. She's the reason why we have all the snow here. She did. She ordered it. She told me she did. So anyway, I've also updated the listings of events for 2018. We're done. It's done. It's over. 2017 for me is officially over as far as the calendar is concerned on the events page at paranewsinsider.com. I think I have like at least 40 events here that I spent a little time. I did the ghost section, I think, a couple of weeks ago, and now I just updated UFOs and the cryptid section a couple of days ago as well. So it's tuning up for 2018, and I know there's a lot out there that I have not put on there yet. There's a few that I'm kind of waiting on that they haven't really formally announced anything, or their websites have not been updated. But I have last year's links and some links from the year before, and hopefully we'll have a lot more added on as the actual calendar flips to 2018. And we'll continue to update that throughout the year and add more events to the page. I'm really excited about that because these paranormal events, some people like them, some people hate them. They think it's just getting popularity contests and getting a bunch of big-time speakers or paracelebs up there to talk about what they've done on their TV shows and to sell t-shirts and things. But there's a lot to be learned from these things. There's a lot of great conversations, a lot of interesting people. And I'm not just talking speakers, your vendors, people that are selling books, people that are authors, people that have actually done the work that are there at these events. You can learn a lot from these people. And that's why I talk about these events. Yes, I'm a speaker. Yes, I've written books, so I do have a little bit of a vested interest in these things, but I like to attend them as well. Even if I'm speaking, you will find me in the audience with a notepad and a pen and my head down at times writing, usually not taking a nap, but yeah, I'm usually writing. I'm learning from these people. And yes, you have the opportunity to kind of share information or share knowledge and kind of network with people. But it's also about learning from people. So I don't care how long you've been in the field. For me, over 20 years, and I still learn something every time I go to one of these events. So that's what I go for, to listen to other people and to learn from other people, and also to help sometimes train other people or teach them what I know as well. So if you're interested in going to any kind of paranormal conference or convention, check out paranewsinsider.com and click on the events tab at the top. And as always, if you have any information about any event and would like to hear about it here as well as see it on the website, let me know. You can email me at insider@paranewsinsider.com or go to paranewsinsider.com and have a little page there, a contact form you can fill out and send it my way. And you can also find me on Facebook or Twitter. And you can shoot me a message there as well. And I'll gladly get that event up. And I'm going to try to spend a little bit more time next year talking about these events, kind of hyping them up, not just what the events are and where they're taking place, but some of the people that are going to be there as well. And maybe if you're hosting an event, to get you on the air, and we'll talk about your event, and you can plug it if you'd like, or I can do it for you. Either way, I think these are very valuable to the field. And for me, I'm making the leap. I'm going from speaker and table renter, I don't know what the term would be for that, but to actually hosting my own paranormal conference next year, February 17, 2018, the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference will be taking place in Twinsburg, Ohio, which is smack dab between Akron and Cleveland up here in Northeast Ohio. It's a dangerous time of the year to have something like this. But we also have a lot of other big events going on around that time frame. So I'm not really worried about the weather. It's a it's an area that's very close to State Route 91 and a couple of interstates that are heavily plowed if anything were to happen. So I'm very confident that even if the weather is a little nasty like it is tonight, we'll have no problem putting on this event. And I'm really looking forward to, like I said, hopefully I have the time to sit and listen to these speakers, because I've put together, not to brag, but I've put together a very good lineup of people. I try to get close talent, but also at the same time, a diverse lineup of great speakers and great presenters, including our very own Colin Schneider, who is the host of CryptoKid Radio every Monday night right here on WCJV. And a lot of other people. A lot of people have talked about their books when I do the book of the week, which you might have noticed I haven't done one the last couple of weeks. That's because I'm covering this top 10 paranormal news stories of 2017. So trying to concentrate on that a little bit more. But trust me, my Christmas list was nothing but books. So I'm going to have a lot of reading to do. And I've got a few here that I've already finished that we'll be talking about as the weeks come through. I guess in January we'll pick it up sometime, and we'll start talking books again. But in the meantime, why don't we start talking news? That's what you came here for, right? That's what you paid money for. Well, you didn't pay for this. It's free. Should be. Cryptid news. Yeah, this is I mentioned this, the International Cryptozoology Museum. It's this week's sponsor, and it's kind of, this isn't a coincidence. I did it on purpose. This is also the week, Friday, I believe it is, December 15th. Yes, it is. The 50th anniversary of the tragic collapse of the Silver Bridge that joined Point Pleasant, West Virginia with the great state of Ohio. The bridge collapsed, like I said, December 15th, 1967, during rush hour, claiming the lives of 46 people. And despite what many people think, a lot of people think it was caused by Mothman. The sightings, it was a correlation between the events, and this was the final thing that was leading up to this. I know that's a nice thought. It's a great way to sell books. I think it was just a coincidence. The collapse was actually caused by structural integrity and poor maintenance of the bridge. However, the association with Mothman has inspired some books, like I mentioned, and a movie. You might have saw that, Richard Gere, pretty cool cat. Very good movie. And this week's 50th anniversary will also bring out, yes, another book. And who else but Lauren Coleman. He's releasing his latest book this Friday called Mothman Evil Incarnate, the unauthorized companion to the Mothman Prophecies. This book will have some information on the Chicago sightings of this year, as well as a lot of information on the original sightings from Point Pleasant. If you're interested in getting that book, I'm going to put the link in the chat room. So if you're hanging out in the chat room, or you want to kind of listen to the show live at any point in time, the chat room is a great place to do that. You have, it's not like 500 people in the chat room. You'll be able to have a really intelligent, fun conversation. Dita might keep you sidetracked a little bit, but it's always a lot of fun there in the chat room. She already got the link up there for you. Wow. Mother cover. I'll put the link in there. And if you follow the link, it's go to cryptozoonews.com and you'll find the link for the story. And there you can also get an autographed copy, which I don't know. I might get that for myself for Christmas. Why not? I don't have enough Mothman books. So, I don't normally do coming soon books, but I thought that was a very interesting book. And he also had one, I believe it was back in 2002 on Mothman. So this is kind of an updated version. It's completely different. It's not updated, but it's a different version of Mothman information with an update on a lot of different things. So just, yeah, check it out. Read about it. And again, if you're not in the chat room and you're not listening live, that's okay. Because if you follow me on Facebook, I will be putting out all of these links during the week and usually after it. Now, if there's a big story, something's breaking or going on, I'll do it before the show. But I generally will release these links after the show is on. But you know, sometimes I break my own rules. Another interesting story here. You might not have heard about this. I find this very interesting because you don't really hear much about water creatures other than, let's see, Loch Ness and that Iceland one keeps popping up. We had one in Alaska. I think that was this year or last year. Another cool story. But this one comes from Australia, down under. I know that's horrible. That's my Australian accent. A strange animal sighting in Australia has experts scratching their heads. They are baffled, because that's usually what people say. I didn't say the word baffled. I'm just saying. A short clip shot via cell phone shows what is seen for about 10 seconds as a family was fishing in the Hawkesbury River near Patonga, which is a city just north of Sydney, Australia, along the coast in New South Wales. It's on the eastern coast of the country. And one of the witnesses said it looked like almost like a human head coming out of the water. Kind of spooky. It did spook one of the witnesses who said that he took his feet out of the water. A good thing, too, because there's great white sharks. Not in the river, but in the water. So it's, pretty dangerous waters. The creature seemed to look around and then dive back under the water. Now, one expert stated that she felt that it was more than likely a seal. Now, I don't want to claim that I'm an expert or I know more than anybody else or whatever. I don't live there. I'm not used to those waters down there. But, I've been fortunate to see a lot of sea creatures in my travels, both oceans, Gulf of Mexico, quite a bit over the last few years. So I don't know. It didn't look like a seal to me at all. And I've seen a lot of seals, especially up in Washington State. It just didn't behave like one to me. But honestly, the first thing that I thought of when I saw this, I watched it a few times, my opinion, take it or leave it, it looks to me like a sea turtle. Now, to me, I can clearly see a large round body behind the head. And as the creature begins to dive, you can see splashing from the rear and front off to the side, which would, to me, indicate the flippers on a sea turtle. And that would happen from a seal. If you've ever watched what a seal does, they're very repetitive in how they act and what they do, especially when they're sunning themselves. They have a kind of a pattern you can almost memorize. I've done this from taking pictures of them. But also when they're in the water, they pop their head up, they pop their head down, and they swim away. This thing kind of moved its head down and just kind of dove at the same time. And it just looked kind of awkward at the top of the water. It looked very much like a turtle, which I've seen a lot of sea turtles. Got to hold one actually this year. A couple babies down in the Cayman Islands. So I don't know. It looked to me like a sea turtle. And they should be heavily in that area about this time of the year. Let me get that link in the chat room. There's a video. If you go to the link, read the story. Oh, there's a little video in there you can watch. It's real short. Don't worry. Baby sea turtles. They're cute. Yep. So, yeah, the Hawkesbury River. So it was in a river. It wasn't really out in the open water, which would be kind of, I don't want to say rare, but not usually something you would see a sea turtle moving into up into a river. Might have been confused. And they're usually very, very skittish around people, but it is the breeding season for them. The water is warm. So who knows? It might have just gotten a little lost. Maybe somebody else saw this thing, and we'll see if this story continues to evolve as they usually sometimes do. I don't know, something like that. Another story. This one's in the UFO area. I wasn't really going to talk about this, but I've seen already just today, before I came on the show, a number of people were talking about this in different, kind of different ways. And this is the headline I'm reading here is from CBSNews.com. And the headline says, "Don't assume it's a UFO. Military aircraft caused mystery lights in Colorado skies." So essentially, over the weekend, a lot of people saw near the Denver area what looked like a formation of lights in the sky. People jumped to the instant conclusion that it's UFOs, as we do. That's what happens. People see strange lights in the sky and they think, whoa, 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 UFOs. It's just something out of the ordinary. And really and truly, the definition of a UFO, when you go back to the early 1950s when the U.S. government defined a UFO, it was actually UFOB back then because it was unidentified flying object. The basic definition was something you cannot readily identify, something that does not behave like what you would consider normal aircraft. So really and truly, when you see a long string of lights in the sky, it's not normal. It doesn't really act normal. That's not really what you normally see. So technically, my opinion, yeah, it was a UFO to people that didn't know what it was. Now, to jump to the conclusion that it's alien-driven aircraft or craft controlled by aliens, maybe they're not sitting behind the controls. Maybe it's a alien drone or something like that. I mean, yeah, if you jump to that conclusion, that's a little far. Now, some people did say that they thought that they were drones, awful high up for drones. But it turned out to be it was a convoy of C-17 aircraft that were involved in a training exercise. They were headed from South Carolina to Nevada and back. And they're actually flying in a it's called an echelon formation, kind of like a V shape there. But it is kind of deceiving if you're not used to seeing these kind of aircraft in the sky in this formation. Looks a little freaky, and it might throw you for a loop there. And these aircraft, there's a quote here. It says C-17s have been modified to be just a little quieter. They are also flying a little slower, and at that kind of power, you're not going to hear a lot of noise. That was a spokesman for, Steve Cowell, an aviation expert, saying that that's why people didn't hear engines or anything like that. It was just really odd and ominous. But it got a lot of press, got a lot of attention on social media throughout the weekend. And wasn't sure. I figured it was going to be explainable. But I think the explanation was already out by the time I saw it go viral, which is kind of weird. Hate when that happens. People should just report the truth, because the truth, as they say, is out there. And so let me get that linky dinky in the chat room, throw it in there. Hopefully I don't hit anybody. There he goes. And like I said, if you're in the chat room, you get to first crack at these stories. If you haven't heard of them, you get these links right away. You can read about them as I'm talking, and or you can just file them away and read about them later. All right. And here's another story. This ghost. I got a ghost story here. I wasn't going to talk about this either. It depends on how much time. But this is something that I think it's kind of important because, you know, for me, sometimes I forget, you know, just having so much experience in the field. Not saying that I'm an expert at all, or that I've seen it all or done it all. It's just when you do this and you research this, you read about stuff, you research, you write books, you work with a lot of great people out in the field, you learn new things, you're just involved with this field for so long, off and on over the years. I think sometimes I kind of lose my ability to remember what it was like to not know anything about this field. So an interesting story popped up, and I kind of rolled my eyes and just kept on clicking, because it didn't really, I don't know, just wasn't anything that I really care to think about. But I realize this is an important thing that a lot of people are really discussing. And I see social media in some places where the story is posted. People are arguing about this, really heavily heated discussions and more or less belief-based interpretations of this particular individual story. And this comes from England. It's a place called the Belvedere Orphanage. And it's being torn down. It's in the process of being demolished. And there's, you know, this photograph of a big caterpillar machine tearing down the wall. And this, it's, you know, the roof is gone. And this building is just, it's gone. It's done. There is no saving this thing. And the big question about this, actually the title of this story is Demolition of Abandoned Orphanage Raises Questions About Fate of Ghostly Presence. So the question is essentially, if we're tearing down this building, does this eliminate the ghosts? Are they no longer present? Are they no longer there because the building that allowed them to be is gone? It's a pretty interesting question. And it's one, again, people all have your own opinion and you're going to argue, because the reason for that is we don't really know how to properly define what a ghost is. Now, a ghost can be one thing to one person. A ghost can be something to another person. But we don't really know exactly scientifically to define what a ghost is. If you read one book, you're going to have one definition. You're going to listen to a parapsychologist, you're going to have another definition. Even parapsychologists don't agree on the definition. So if we can't honestly define what a ghost is, how do we define how a ghost stays or goes, or what creates it or what eliminates it for that matter? I mean, if we knew what made them appear, then yeah, maybe we could answer what would make them disappear. Again, beyond that, it's just a hypothetical question. I mean, ghosts are essentially an experience of a formerly living person by a living person. So my opinion basically is, and this is going to sound wishy-washy, but walls or no walls, whether there's a wall up or there's no wall at all, this presence should exist as long as there are those who wish to connect to it are present. So, you know, a lot of people say, well, it doesn't matter if the ghosts were attached to that area. It doesn't matter if the house is there or the building is there or not. It should still exist. Now, yeah and no. I mean, it depends on what your definition. Again, this is all based on your perception of what is or what isn't. Now, if it's attached to walls and the building, and if you tear all that building down and take it away, then maybe it's gone. But if it's attached to the environment, it's attached to the geomagnetic grid or whatever you want to define it as, then yeah, you take away the building, that thing is still there. And some people use the example of seeing ghosts walking through walls or walking up stairways that are no longer there. So there's some experiences there that we can relate to that would say, fine, the walls are gone, the ghost is still there. But again, we don't know. We don't know what it is. And when you read the story, it's kind of wishy-washy as well, because they try to define what a poltergeist is, and they kind of, you know, poltergeist in the United Kingdom is a little bit different than kind of how we talk about it here. But a lot of people think of it as an actual type of ghost. But a lot of parapsychologists and a lot of other people consider a poltergeist is essentially something from the living, not a ghost. And they kind of have the definitions kind of crossed up in the story. It's a little confusing as well. So it's, you read through the story, it's a little over here and a little over there. But I think it's a really good thing for people to kind of talk about or to think about. But you have to be careful with your perspective and your beliefs, because just because you believe something doesn't make it real. And, you know, again, I've seen people arguing on one side or the other, or even about specifics about one side or the other, which is kind of weird. I don't understand that one. But, you know, that's how people are very passionate about their beliefs, especially when it comes to ghosts. And I've had numerous conversations with people about that kind of stuff. And, you know, again, it just boils down to your perception about things. So let me get that link. I'll get that link and throw it in the chat room so you can have access to it again. I'll mention it again. Don't worry. If you're not listening live, I will get these links out during the week, and you can check up on those on Facebook at facebook.com/Paranews Insider. And other news, this is the meat and potatoes here of the news this week. Kind of everything was built around this. But first, I want to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we were headed to space. That's where we're headed right now. I guess it's official. It's official. We're going to space. But anyway, NASA is planning another big announcement for this week pertaining to the Kepler Space Telescope. We've had a couple of these during the year. The last one, people were really speculating that we found alien life or intelligent alien life, and this was disclosure and all these other weird things. But no, usually when it's dealing with the Kepler Space Telescope, it's about finding exoplanets. And it's more or less probably what's going to happen here this week. Now, the Kepler Space Telescope was launched in 2009 and has since changed the way scientists perceive potential life in outer space, especially how we perceive exoplanets and what's really out there flying around in these other galaxies around other suns. It's discovered thousands of exoplanets, with many potentially having the ability to harbor life. So this week's announcement will stream live on NASA's website on Thursday, December 14th at 1 p.m. Eastern. And I would give some live stuff, but I'll be working. But I'll be very, very attentive to what this is. It's more or less going to be more than likely about another exoplanet discovery. But it's also leaning towards the possibility. It's also going to deal with something called Google Brain, which you might not have heard of. This thing's actually kind of like analyzing the Kepler data in different ways other than how people are crunching the numbers or crunching the information. But what the actual announcement is, nobody really knows. There's not a whole lot of speculation out there. People aren't claiming it's aliens this time yet, but it's only Tuesday. We'll see what happens tomorrow. Unless NASA tips their hand beforehand and says it's potentially about something else. Is it about an alien discovery? Extraterrestrial life, even at a microbe level? Probably not. Probably not. It's more than likely, again, like I said, about a new planet discovery or something with Google Brain and how it's estimated the number of potential life-bearing planets. But that's just my guess. It could also be about the newly discovered so-called super Earth that's named K2-18c, which was recently found in the constellation Leo, but that's kind of far away. It's 111 light years away, so I really doubt that it's going to get its own press conference. I really doubt it, but who knows? I don't know. They've assembled a nice panel of people that are going to be talking about this stuff, but I think it's more probably due to the information that they're crunching from this Google Brain thing and how it ties into the Kepler Space Telescope. Great information. Regardless, it's going to be fun. I mean, I always want to ask questions when I listen to these conferences. They're interesting stuff. So anyway, yes, the big announcement yesterday, and it's interesting because 45 years ago this week, the last person to walk on the moon was Harrison Schmitt, who did so during the Apollo 17 mission 45 years ago this week. It's the last time we've been up there. Well, yesterday, President Trump signed Space Policy Directive 1, which will direct NASA to get the United States back to the moon as well as to Mars. Now, how all of this works will remain to be seen, as the space program will have to be completely built from scratch And Boeing seems to be helping NASA pretty much get to that point already. NASA and others have speculated and researched ways to get people out in space from the moon and beyond, but it has it's been proven to be potentially expensive and very difficult to get us there. But he wants us to get there, so we're going to get there. For me personally, I'm really excited about this. I grew up with the space shuttle. I didn't get to see people on the moon or anything, so I never experienced that. I just saw the space shuttle, a couple of tragedies along the way, and we had that with all the moon stuff as well. So it's another phase of discovery in outer space, and I'm excited. Hopefully, all these things will be put together in my lifetime. Whether or not we reach Mars by that point, I don't know. I'll be pretty old, but still excited for this, and it's exciting to see how this is going to affect science in the eyes of the youth, especially here in the United States. It's inspiring, and I know a lot of kids in my generation wanted to be astronauts because of what they were seeing with the space shuttle and people going traveling into space and making some discoveries that was on the news and different things. But also, it's going to be a great day to look forward to when we can hopefully prove to a lot of people out there that not only is the Earth spherical and not flat, but we can also get to the moon. That's going to be exciting. I hope to see that. It's going to be a lot of fun. Well, with that, there is one more story, but I'm not going to talk about it. It's an awesome story. It's been an ongoing mystery. I just read about it before I came on the air, and I decided if I don't get to it by the break, I'm not going to cover it. And we didn't make it, but it's an awesome story that I'm going to hold on to for next week. And something I've talked about in the past, you're not going to want to miss. This is probably the biggest mystery, most mysterious, I guess I should say, story that I've ever covered. And this is number 13, the 13th time it's happened. Oh my gosh, you've got to stay tuned. That's my teaser for this week. You got to tune in for that. So with that being said, we're going to turn our attention to the top 10 paranormal stories of 2017. And like I said, we already started the countdown a couple of weeks ago. We did 8 and 7 last week, so obviously 10 and 9 the week before. And it's chugging along pretty well, I think. It's unfolding pretty well. And yeah, once we get toward the top here, or I should say toward the middle, I guess, it's kind of where things kind of get controversial, because there's a lot of stories that people are like, they expect to be the number one story. And all of a sudden you talk about it, and they're like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. How come you're talking about this one already? How can that beat all these other stories? And unfortunately, I think we're going to have that happen tonight. But to kind of put things in perspective, I mean, come on. Don't we have enough countdowns? Don't we talk about this stuff enough? Well, yeah. And, I rank it just for, I don't know, maybe shock value a little bit. But I also, I think you kind of have to rank stuff. It's not just 10 great stories of 2017 or whatever year. You know, I think it's important to kind of give your own kind of personal view of where these stories should stack together. And again, this is just me giving you these stories in this particular order. Nobody else has really contributed to this. This is all me. So you can blame me if you don't like it. It's my fault. Years past, I used to have people vote on it. I had a message board and had people vote on it or discuss it and try to. No, it was just too much. I just do it myself now. No offense. But it's. I go back and forth with a lot of this stuff. And I've stayed steady and true in the last few weeks. But even the night before I debuted the top 10, I actually changed the number one story. So I haven't changed it since then. But yeah, I think it's a little controversial this year. Normally you have big stories that really stick out. And the way I kind of look at this is, I look at all year long. And has the story made a big impact on one specific area of the paranormal? Impact, it could be anything from something that fooled people for quite a while, a long-standing hoax, or something that brought us new information, or a breakthrough, a discovery. It's changed the way we look at something. Those are very impactful stories. And I also weigh it against how viral they were. If a story was just locally viral and it wasn't regionally viral or worldwide viral, then it might not get as much weight. Now, if it's a great discovery that happened, but not a lot of people heard about it, it's still going to get a lot of weight, because I think that's important if it breaks down barriers or changes the way we think of things. But obviously, a story that's a worldwide coverage type of story that people all over the world are talking about, it's also going to get a lot of weight. So it's kind of weighing these two important things against each other is when it gets a little tricky to really put them in a category, you know, put them in levels and say, well, this is a top three. Is this one more important than this? And I really, some of these stories I really had to kind of argue with myself over and kind of say, well, you know, is this one really beat this one? And sometimes it's a lot easier to do. This year was a little bit more difficult, and I think you could have come out any of the top five, I think, could have easily been the number one story, but hopefully you'll like the way the story turns out this year. So that's kind of a little bit of a glimpse as to how I rank these stories. And a quick rundown. Yes, I've done number 10 through number 7. So number 10 was about the Aflocalypse gets a partial explanation. And this is basically about scientists were doing data on looking at solar flares and how it affects sperm whales and their beaching of themselves. And they found a correlation with geomagnetic activity. So being able to explain part of the Aflocalypse, which if you don't know what the Aflocalypse was, it was a very high trending story many years ago. It freaked a lot of people out because I thought it was like the world's coming to an end. Something's going on. It was the number five story back in 2012. But before that, in 2011, it was the number two story in my countdown. It was that big of a deal. It happened all year long. There was a story almost every single week I was talking about where there was a mass animal die-off, fish dying, birds crashing in people's houses, and it was just mayhem, like craziness that just kept – it just seemed like it was beyond just rational explanation, and it was just craziness. So to have a partial explanation here, I felt like it was important, and obviously it was only number 10. Number 9 – was Bigfoot, and essentially it was a culmination of all of the big stories that have happened this year in the world of Bigfoot, and a lot of interesting stories, a lot of accusations about proving that Bigfoot is real that are still in debate as of yet. We have not proven anything. You know, Bigfoot usually makes the top 10, barely made it this year because there was a lot of, like I said, odd and end stories that just kind of had a lot of weight to them. And I wasn't sure which would be the top story. Bigfoot definitely would not have been the number one story this year unless he was found. Now, number 8 was the eclipse or the end of the world. And as I kind of made reference to, the end of the world, really no way it would be the number one story, because if the world ended, I wouldn't be able to say it was, you know, number one. I mean, it would be number one, but I would be dead probably. So how would I say it was number one? The eclipse was a big story, and the whole thing with Nibiru and the world coming to an end, as it seems like it's getting more and more stories about that every year. The Earth was supposed to end, I don't know, like 20 times this year, it seems like, every time you turn around. You know, it was July, then it was September, then it was November. I can't keep track anymore. I need a calendar just to keep track of my end days. I don't know. It's just getting out of hand. I don't know. Next year, we'll see. Maybe there'll be more of this. But, you know, it all just kind of tied together. The eclipse kind of was a centerpiece for some of these these hypotheses that the world was coming to an end. So I kind of stuck them together, kind of bundled them together as one unique story. Number seven that we talked about last week, flat earthers. Yeah, the flat earth movement. I can't believe that this actually made the top 10, but yes, it did. Flat earthers, a lot of different things going on with Kyrie Irving talking about it, and Shaquille O'Neal got in on it. Then we had the GoFundMe campaign that was a flat-out failure. Get it? Flat-out failure. Yeah, I guess that joke fell flat itself. So we had a lot of stories about this flat earth thing, and it all culminated with a conference. Yes, there was a conference for that. It wasn't on my list, and I don't think it'll be on my list next year. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll throw it on there. Yeah, a conference. They had a conference about the Flat Earth International Conference. Wow. So it definitely had to make the top 10. It got a lot of press this year. A lot of people were talking about it. And that now leads us to our number six story of the year, the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2017, as created by myself, The Insider. And like I mentioned, this one is going to cause a little bit of, I don't know, some people aren't going to agree with this one, but hear me out. Just hear me out. And yes, the number six story, in all honesty, was probably one of the most popular here on this radio show throughout the year. I'm not going to beat around the bush. I'll just talk about this. The number six story of the year this year, none other than the Chicago Phantom. Yes, the Chicago Phantom. Now, Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters was reporting that there was not one, not two, but three of these Mothman-like creatures. That was more likely a kind of like a human-like owl in the Chicago area. It was described as a bat as well. Now, this all started this year on April 7th when a man encountered a large 7-foot-tall man with giant wings and glowing red eyes when walking his dog near Oz Park. The second incident occurred April 15th at 2 a.m. near the Chicago International Produce Market, which is about 5.5 miles southwest of Oz Park as the owl flies. But this story actually started back in 2011 with a sighting on August 22nd, with two more sightings happening that year. There were no reports to anyone's knowledge until these in April, and subsequent reports during the year provided sightings that dated back to as early as February in 2017 of sightings. And while the total, I think it was up to 57 sightings, the total, but I think it's now at 56. There was a recent sighting that I didn't talk about. I don't know. I guess some of these got kicked out, including the three in 2011. So a total of 56. And we have to wonder, was this the return of Mothman? Were these a bunch of misidentifications of bats and owls? Was this all a giant and extremely elaborate hoax? I don't know. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows what exactly is happening. I don't know if it's one of those things. It could be a combination of these things. And I seriously doubt, let me just throw this out here just to clarify. I do not think that Lon Strickler or Manuel Navarrete of UFO Clearinghouse were a part of any kind of hoax. It's possible that a few people started this as a hoax or just providing misinformation just to see how it was covered, and maybe other people jumped in. I mean, a few of these sightings might have been legitimate. They might have been mistaken identity or based on fear. Either way, there are still no answers to what may truly have been seen over the skies in 2017 over Chicago. The toughest part about this is being so many witnesses and so many case files, is there's actually a startling and complete lack of evidence in any of these sightings. No matter how many people have come forward, there's no physical evidence. a purported police report, which would have been very vital to the legitimacy of this story, supposedly filed by a witness who was a former police officer, did not even exist. And despite happening in areas with potentially high concentrations of people, relatively few people came forward. There was only one photograph, I believe, that turned up, and it wasn't very good. And even when you're looking at these sightings through Google Earth, you can see there's areas where there's cameras. There's cameras, there's street cameras all over the place in some of these places. And a couple of the areas where these things happened, it would have been physically impossible for the creature being that size to actually be in that area with traffic and cars like it was described. Would not have been able to happen. So a lot of these stories, a lot of the information, and you know, I did a little bit of research as each sighting came out, and I kind of actually honestly lost a little interest in this when I was able to discover when somebody said, oh, I had a clear view a half mile away, yet the actual weather would have not been able to see that far. Some people say it was nice and clear, when actually that day there was traces of rain. I mean, a lot of different things just didn't add up in the time frames where people said that they saw things. And, you know, with the police report and a lot of other things, it just really, I don't know, it just became a larger question. It's like, almost like the story of this thing happening was more important than if anything was actually happening. The local media as well really didn't take to the story very seriously at all, and didn't react to the story as it was covered by phantomsandmonsters.com. But it just kind of like came back toward late summer. And once that story broke, a whole bunch of more sightings trickled in. But it got a little ridiculous at that point, to be honest with you. And the local media basically just slammed the story, and nobody could really get any other witnesses. So it was weird that, you know, only witnesses were only going to MUFON or to Phantoms and Monsters or to Manuel Navarrete of UFO Clearinghouse, and local media, local police, nobody else was getting these reports, which is weird. It just kind of doesn't make sense when you're talking about a major metropolitan area. Yeah, I mean, we should not view these as 50-plus cases that together prove there was a Mothman-like creature flying over Chicago. I've seen a lot of people say that. Well, there's so many events, so many people that have seen this, that has to be something. Well, that's not true. Just because there's all these sightings, and again, we can pick at one or two or three and discredit them or disprove them by other facts and other information that's present, or a lack of evidence or information that should have been able to be discovered. And just to clear the air here, I'm not trying to discredit the hard work done by Lon or Manuel or anyone else that's done anything out there with this, but there's so many other forces at work here. And having pretty much a live paranormal blog with heavy publicity, you're taking a chance at that. I'm going to be honest with you. That's why I don't do it that way. When somebody emails me and says, hey, I found a story, I'm going to do research before I even talk about it. If I get a case, I'm going to investigate the case before I make a public statement about it. And that's kind of, you know, some people take that, you know, and I like what Lon does. I appreciate what he does, but it comes with the price, a potential price, in that you can be susceptible to a hoax or a long-term hoax like this, because you're getting the information, you're doing a little bit of research, and you're pushing it out as fast as you can. Sometimes that backfires. Sometimes it's great and these stories break, and other people are able to put these things together, or you as a researcher can help put it together. But I see a lot of paranormal bloggers, and I'm not naming Lon as this, but I see a lot of other paranormal bloggers that are just churning out so much information so fast, so quickly. They're just getting email, turning it out, getting an email, turning it out, that they don't really take the time to really investigate that. And I know Lon did a fantastic job interviewing people, calling people back and talking them through. And, you know, he was very seriously convinced that these things were true and honest. And that was really what's made it very difficult for me to, you know, really look at these stories and be critical of it. But I think you have to. You have to step back and go, well, okay, where is the overwhelming evidence? We have an overwhelming story. I want to see overwhelming evidence for this. So will we ever know for sure what happened in the skies over Chicago in 2017? Probably not, unless some people start coming forward and say, hey, we faked this one, and this one, and we can eliminate all these at once. I don't think that's going to happen. But again, the good thing about these sightings is that it helps spawn at least two books. And I haven't mentioned this one yet, but I'll go ahead and mention it. One being from Lon Strickler titled Mothman Dynasty, Chicago's Winged Humanoids. And I don't know when that's coming out, but it should be out pretty soon. And he's, you know, Lon did a lot of the legwork, if not most of the legwork, in dealing with this. He's the one that came up with the name, the Chicago Phantom. So he gets heavy credit for this story. And, you know, you got Lauren Coleman coming in with Mothman Evil Incarnate, the unauthorized companion to the Mothman Prophecies, which comes out, again, December 15th on the 50th anniversary of the collapse of the Silver Bridge. But it's not specifically covering the Chicago sightings. It's just kind of mentioning it. I don't know how in detail he goes or how long the chapter is. I haven't got my hands on the book yet, but it does sound like he's going to mention the Chicago sightings and is tying that to Mothman, which I'm not sure if he can. I mean, I like Mothman as the individual story, and we've heard about Mothman appearing all over the world since these Point Pleasant sightings. But I don't know if you can do that. I just don't know. I mean, I don't know how I feel about that. But either way, if you want to know more about the Chicago Phantom, I highly recommend getting a hold of Lon Strickler's book, Mothman Dynasty, Chicago's Winged Humanoids, and just check out phantomsandmonsters.com in general, because that's where all the information is, all the cases, and an interactive map that you can look at and see where all these sightings happened in Chicago. So obviously, we need to talk about the details here, why the story made the top 10. And I think it's obvious. This is one of the most captivating and frustrating stories at the same time of the year. And it was definitely the one that I talked about the most. This story had so many elements that deemed this worthwhile and potentially the greatest story I covered since 2008. So why was the story only number 6? If it was one of the worthwhile, potentially greatest stories I've covered since 2008. Well, it all came down to a complete lack of verifiable evidence, despite a large number of purported witnesses, a police report that was non-existent, and some other information, again, from my own work, based on my limited view of this case information. I wasn't privy to any inside information. I just got what you guys got, so that's all I had to go on. And I was able to find many inconsistencies in some of those details. It led me to cast some doubt, some serious doubt on the story, despite the hope. You know, I was really hopeful that there was something in the skies that we could identify. You know, maybe it was a very large bat, a fruit bat or something else. I don't know what it could have been. I was hopeful we would get a logical explanation. And again, while I seriously doubt Lon or anyone else involved in this story were behind any sort of hoax or creation of this story, I'm not entirely sure that many of these reports were fueled by deception, no matter how genuine they might have seemed. Sadly, we'll probably never know the reality behind the story as a whole. And we move on. That's your number 6 story, the Chicago Phantom. Number five this year is it's one of my favorite ones. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. One of my favorite cryptids. It could be yours too. I don't know. A lot of people love this guy because it seems like there's a chance that it's going to come back. I don't know. I'm on the fence. I'm hopeful that it will, but I seriously doubt that it will. I think if any cryptid creature has a chance of being discovered that is supposedly extinct, I'd say this is fairly high up there. So number 5 this year in the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2017, the thylacine. Yes, the thylacine. It was a fairly popular news story last year, although the stories of accounts of sightings failed to crack the top 10 last year for 2016. It was close. It was close. The thylacine has never made the top 10 ever. I was astounded by that. I could have swore it was. I went through my own work and discovered, no, he didn't. So this year, a mix of stories finally helped push the most famous Australian cryptid deep into the countdown. And it started back in mid-January when a woman came forward with a video she took back in September of 2015 of what she feels is definitive proof that the thylacine, or Tasmanian tiger, is not extinct. She filmed the video at 8:45 a.m. on that September morning as she sat and watched kangaroos on her property when the strange animal captured her attention. Many people felt that the shaky video was just a fox or other explainable animal. But she says no, it wasn't a dog, wasn't a cat, wasn't a fox. It was something else. And I don't know, it's still that video and a lot of the other ones. You know, it's just a matter of perspective. There's not enough information to really go one way or the other. And we also had the Thylacine Awareness Group. They were pumping out videos all year long. It started back in January. They pumped out a few late in the year, and they were back. Their Thylacine Awareness Group was pushing out more stories, more videos, and more stories, more potential sightings. We also had some interesting stories about the thylacine in the science realm as well, which is weird. Scientists were scanning the preserved brains of thylacines with imaging techniques and came to the conclusion that the Tasmanian tiger or thylacine was a predator and not a scavenger, which was something that the science was kind of going back and forth on. So that was interesting to see some actual scientific work done on the thylacine for a project called BrainArc, which will help create digital reconstructions of brains to help solve many riddles about animals and their brain structures, which will lead to their habits. And in March, there was another sighting from a former tourism operator. Unfortunately, his story came back from 1983. Wow, it's a little old there, guy. Then we had, late March, we had Dr. Sandra Abel from James Cook University, which would be leading a field survey at Cape York Peninsula in the far north Queensland area of Australia. Dr. Abel very recently had found the second surviving population of northern pitons, a small marsupial, with using over 100 sensor cameras. And they were going to bring 50 cameras near bait stations and look for thylacines, but they didn't find any. Then we also had Chris Rayberg's hair experiment, which I thought was really, really interesting. I got really drawn into this story. He's a photographer, amateur naturalist with a deep interest in the Tasmanian tiger. And he got a hold of an envelope with hair from a thylacine, and thinking that these hairs were probably meant to be processed into slides. Now, he bought a cabinet and it had these thylacine hairs in it. He did the research to make sure that this guy was on the up and up and it wasn't a hoax. And he did research on this, and I didn't know this either, but there's only two sets of information on thylacine hair. One was made in the 1950s, and there were drawings. There weren't even pictures. And in 1985, there was grainy black and white photographs. So he wanted to buy these hairs and do very deep digital samples of these hairs just in case somebody would actually discover a thylacine or state that they found thylacine hair. So we have a sample to match it up on. And I donated to this because I really felt like it was a worthwhile cause. It was on experiment.com, and you could donate money to the work. And right before the show on April 25th, I donated. And Chris was very nice about this. He actually emailed me and thanked me and said that he was happy that this was on the Paranormal News Insider. So I was excited that it actually became fully funded the following week. and raised over just over $1,800. And there was only 26 people that donated money. And I was very proud to say that I was one of them. And he's still ongoing. He's got a lot of the photographs up, and a lot of the stuff will be coming online more than likely next year. So I'm really excited about that. I'm happy that I helped fund this project. And hopefully it will come in handy down the road. That would be great. Let's see. More hoaxes. They had the teacher's video in July, which was the one where this creature entered in. He was taking a photograph of the Australian sunrise, and this four-legged creature ran across the view, and it was kind of hobbling a little bit. And a lot of people thought it was a dog or a dingo with an injured pelvis or rear leg that made it appear to hop or move its hindquarters in an odd way. But people, again, a lot of people were convinced that this was it. This was definitive proof of this extinct marsupial, carnivorous marsupial. So why this story made the top 10? Yeah, it's a collection of stories. It's what I call bundled information, because let's face it, not one of these individually would have been enough to crack the top 10. But when you talk about the thylacine as a whole, as the concept as it goes through the year, all these different stories, a pair of scientific discoveries aimed toward the thylacine, as well as all of these videos, which are highly questionable, but it spurs people to talk about this. Is it potentially possible that these things can exist? And people were actually out there looking, scientists, not just, you know, us crazy, you know, crazy tree banging cryptozoologists who, you know, we bang trees and scream in the woods. Now it's actual scientists out looking for these things. So, you know, that's why it made the top 10. A lot of attention and discussion into the possibility of the thylacine still being alive somewhere in Australia or Tasmania. It was all over the paranormal news this year. And, you know, the thylacine does make it, but it's usually very sporadic stories. Here, one there, but it was pretty much all year long that we heard about the thylacine. And despite plenty of news in years past, 2017 showed more than hoax photographs and videos, although there was plenty of them to occupy our time. There was also, again, like I mentioned, some scientific attention placed on these purportedly extinct carnivorous marsupials. The Brain ARC project, the photographic survey, and Chris Rayberg's microscopic hair baseline sampling brought some advancement of this lost creature, as well as the hope that one day it could be rediscovered. Why the story is only number 5, despite a trio of stories that moved the thylacine into a potential find, a majority of the focus this year, unfortunately, on the thylacine focused on the hoaxed and more than likely misidentified photographs and videos that still fail to prove that this creature exists. So I'm very happy that the thylacine not only made the list, but it's number 5 this year. And hopefully, if we do discover that thing, that carnivorous marsupial, definitely he would be, or she would be, number 1 next year. Well, we'll see. I'm not going to count my chickens. It's still a tough climb, and it's very doubtful that it's actually out there. It did have a story on the odds of finding one. 1 in 1.6 trillion is what they say the odds are of discovering a thylacine. I covered that story back in April 25th. Yeah, 1 in 1.6 trillion odds. You might not want to place a bet on that. So that's your number 6 and number 5 stories this week. So, man, it's coming. It's coming soon. The 19th, next week, yes, we will have number 4 and number 3. And then following that week, day after Christmas, December 26th, we will debut number 2 and number 1 of the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2017. You might wonder what's coming. I mean, what's left? What is there? It's going to be exciting, folks. You're not going to believe it. It's going to be mind-boggling. And yeah, some people always ask me, well, what if something happens? Like, what if there's a major discovery or a major announcement or a video or a photograph or something? I'm not worried about that. If it does, I've never, not one time in the, well, I've only been doing the countdown for 7 years, been doing the show for 9. Never have I ever had to restructure a top 10. I've kind of wanted to move one up a little bit, like one spot, but I'm not going to do that. It's in stone. Now, there would have to be something very mind-boggling. And who knows, maybe this week something will happen and we'll see. But it's never been a precedent for that. But who knows, maybe this year something major might happen. So you want to keep tuning in. You want to keep listening. And I appreciate you listening tonight, wherever you are. If you're alive, hopefully you're alive, listening live or otherwise, if you're listening through iTunes, Spreaker, Podbean, anywhere, we're available all over the place. And not just this show, but the network as well. WCJV, look it up and listen to all the great shows that are here throughout the week here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting. And for that, that's it. Big thanks to Cindy, my producer, Dita and Paul in the chat room for keeping everyone in line, and for Dita for making it snow. And again, everyone else for listening, no matter where you are or when you tuned in, thank you very much. Honestly, I do appreciate it. It keeps me going each and every week, doing the work behind the scenes. Yeah, it's only an hour. It's on early. I know it's on early. I have a weird job. Can't help it. But it's a lot of work putting this stuff together for you guys, but it's worth it. If somebody out there learns something, and I get a lot of good feedback. I get some bad feedback too, which is great. Feedback is good. So let me know. How am I doing? How you like the show? Something you want to hear? I'll think about it. We'll think about it. We'll talk about it. So with that, I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck. And as always, keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.